Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And yesterday, of course, we didn't have a good martini, but we've got a good martini today, Jim. And it's one that actually encompasses kind of a bunch of small good martinis, but we're kind of rolling them all into one. And it's in a location you might not expect us to be all that excited about. And that is Massachusetts and what's going to happen to the John Kerry Senate seat. Mini good martini number one, John Kerry's leaving the Senate. Unfortunately, he's going to be taking on a very prominent role as Secretary of State. Number two, Barney Frank was not the choice to be the interim senator, thankfully. Deval Patrick choosing his former chief of staff, a guy named Mo Cowan, to fill the seat until the special election takes place. The next bit of good news is that the Democrats are not clearing the field like they did for Martha Coakley in the last special election, and it looks like Ed Markey's going to have at least some relatively good competition from Congressman Stephen Lynch, who's much more conservative than Markey. He's pro-life. He voted against Obamacare. As far as Democrats go, he's got some redeeming qualities. If Scott Brown decides to run, he's got a three-point edge over Ed Markey, who would be considered probably the favorite, unfortunately, in the Democratic primary. So all in all, Jim, not too shabby.
Yeah. One of the things really kind of interesting, you laid out the Markey-Lynch primary pretty well there. A lot of folks kind of figured Markey is the shoo-in for the nomination. A couple of folks up there saying, don't be quite so certain of this. Lynch is definitely kind of an iconoclast amongst Massachusetts Democrats. You just don't find that many Massachusetts Democrats who voted against Obamacare. He does not get along well with the Massachusetts Democratic establishment. Now, in a special election primary, that may not help him very much. But on the other hand, there also is, don't underestimate the insider-outsider angle to this race. Markey has, for all extents and purposes, lived in Northern Virginia for a lot of years. And so the knock on him is going to be, look, this is a guy who lost touch with Massachusetts a long time ago. His wife is employed as a doctor in Northern Virginia. This guy has no roots here. That could, get some traction in amongst Massachusetts Democrats. Whoever comes out of it, it's sounding good that Scott Brown is looking more likely like he's going to run. This will be the third Senate race in 4 years for him. He ran in 2010, he ran in 2012, and it looks like he'll be running in 2013. If he were to win, he would then have four in 5 years because he would be up for re-election in 2014. So maybe a busy couple of years for Scott Brown. The good news is he can reuse all the Scott Brown for Senate yard signs and stationery and all that. The interesting thing is that he actually had a higher favorable rating than Elizabeth Warren did on Election Day 2012. At the end of the day, Massachusetts is a very Democratic state, and then as much as folks in that state liked Scott Brown, they felt the need to elect a Democrat. That may or may not be in place for this election cycle. I wonder if there's a little bit of buyer's remorse or a certain little bit of guilt of throwing out who most Massachusetts voters thought was about as good as a Republican as they were going to get. The other strange wrinkle, and I can see our listeners probably splitting along these lines, Scott Brown is technically pro-choice. I know there are certain restrictions on abortion he does support, but most folks in the pro-life community don't think of him as one of their guys. Whereas, as we mentioned, Stephen Lynch is as a Democrat. So if you end up with a Lynch versus Brown race, you end up with a pro-choice Republican up against a pro-life Democrat. And a scenario you don't see very often. And in a state like Massachusetts, it's a very interesting question to see how that issue would play. So, as you said, lots of good and strange martinis. And maybe in the end of it, look, if nothing else, the Democrats are not getting the rubber stamp that they were kind of hoping for. And who knows? And also just imagine with Barney Frank being in a bad mood over not getting that appointed Senate seat, who knows what kind of trouble he'll stir up in the next couple of months.
Hopefully so. He's endorsed Ed Markey, big shock, and a little bit shocked that Markey wants this. I mean, obviously the Senate's a step up from the House, but he's built up a ton of seniority in the House, and if the Democrats ever get the majority there again, he'd be in a good position to do a lot of horrific damage on climate change issues. So I'm a little bit shocked that he wants to move along from that, but we'll see.
He could finally get that nuclear freeze he's been working on. Worth note, Markey, I got to make sure I double check on this, but I think Markey was elected in 74.
Something like that, yeah.
So he's been in, at least for, he's been in Congress longer than we've been alive. Great to have that fresh new blood up there on Capitol Hill, huh?
Absolutely. Okay, on to martini number two now. And, it was just yesterday, Jim, we were talking about the shockingly low economic growth number, 0.1%, the preliminary number from the Commerce Department. Every piece of bad economic news is a complete shock to the news media and the Obama administration. But it didn't take the Obama administration long to blame Republicans, austerity, George W. Bush headwinds. There's always headwinds of some sort going against them. The bad news, one day after it's clear that the economy is not doing what they promised it would yet again, they are officially killing the Jobs Council. And I don't know if there are any paid positions on the Job Council, but given that it only met a couple of times over its entire existence, that's the type of public service type gig that I would love to have, Jim.
Well, it's worth noting, I have put in an inquiry. I'm curious if any staff are being laid off as the Jobs Council ceases its operation. I just kind of like taking the metaphor even further, that we no longer have jobs in this country. We no longer have Jobs Council either. Drudge has the fantastic headline, Mission Accomplished. Unemployment is 7.8%. The latest quarterly GDP report number was pretty lousy. We will see in a couple of days what the January jobs numbers are, but nobody really sees it being dramatically improved. And much of the reduction in the unemployment rate comes from the shrinkage in the labor supply. You know, people are leaving the workforce. Some of this is out of, voluntary retirement, but some of it is out of involuntary retirement. And some of it is people just giving up on looking for a job and living dependently on others. And this is, most people, you ask people, how's the economy doing? They look at, 22 million people either unemployed or working part-time and wanting full-time. No, the economy's not fixed at all. First of all, I think this illustrates just how meaningless this Jobs Council was. It was meant there as a photo op. It was meant to get good headlines for the administration for one day. It was not meant to do anything. It was not meant to really change anything. And I think the fact that they stopped meeting in January indicated that the Obama administration needed the storyline that the economy's fixed. Well, look around us. It's not fixed. We will see what the next quarterly job numbers indicate. You'd have to look at this and say the odds of negative GDP in the next quarter, 50-50, it's at least a sizable chance that once you throw in the tax hikes that'll be kicking in, various other forms of economic gloom and doom, problems overseas, maybe we'll have a shrinkage next quarter too. And if you have two negative growth for two consecutive quarters, that makes a recession. Welcome to the double dip, folks. But hey, at least we don't have that Jobs Council weighing us down anymore.
It's just not a priority. You can see it from focal point that they have, from the inaugural speech on to guns and immigration and everything else. And it's clear that when they do pivot to jobs, their ideas are not based in what has been proven to be successful in the past. So on the one hand, they're ignoring it. On the other hand, when they do touch it, it just gets worse. So not sure which is a more bleak scenario for the American people. But then again, they voted for it, so I don't feel too bad for them. On to martini number three now, Jim. And as a politician or even anybody else, life is not going great for you when the fact that Homeland Security arrested a guy in your office for being an illegal alien sex offender, that's the good news in your day. That's the story.
That's a low bar to clear. Yeah.
That was the story recently for New Jersey Senator Bob Menendez. But now a story that the Daily Caller broke just before election and the mainstream media completely ignored is coming back with more veracity to it because now the FBI is involved. The Daily Caller story suggested that Senator Menendez made multiple trips to the Dominican Republic and paid to have sex with underage prostitutes. He, of course, is denying that, saying it's the scurrilous allegation of a right-wing blog. But now the FBI is fully investigating this and has recently raided the office of a Florida doctor. Jim, as soon as the FBI starts raiding things, I think the allegations take on a little more legitimacy.
When the Daily Caller came forth with that story, the first, there are two complications. One, it was right as Hurricane Sandy was hitting New Jersey. So everybody in New Jersey had other things on their mind than a potential sex scandal. And the other thing is that, look, Menendez is not married, so it's not like the traditional adultery angle was there. And my understanding was in the Dominican Republic, prostitution was legal. So he had not violated any U.S. laws, even if the allegations have been true. Now, we can say this is, creepy and skeezy and slimy and all that other stuff. But remember, it's New Jersey, and he's a New Jersey Democrat. And I believe, did he take the Torricelli seat?
No, Frank Lautenberg did.
Okay, all right. So this is the Corzine seat.
Right.
Corzine, who, lost all of his investors. Anyway, so in the grand tradition of New Jersey politics, you really got to clear a very high bar to stand out as a scandal. However, everything changes with that quote-unquote magic word, underage. And all of a sudden, what comes across as skeezy and sleazy all of a sudden becomes just unimaginably creepy, even by the standards of New Jersey politics. Now, Menendez is saying this is all a pack of lies, scurrilous, right-wing bloggers are evil, blah, 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 blah. And in the middle of all that, they said, well, you've allegedly gone to this guy's house in the Dominican Republic flown on his private jet, and his office. It was said in the article that Menendez's office said. Now, Greg, I don't know about you. I work in my home office. I hear voices sometimes, but the office itself very rarely speaks. My understanding is that when you hear a voice speaking, there is a person behind that voice. And then traditionally you'd say, Menendez, press secretary so-and-so, or chief of staff so-and-so said, this is all a bunch of patio. Instead, the office said it. So either we have inanimate objects speaking within Menendez's office, which strikes me as the real news coming out of this, or somebody in Menendez's office wanted to say this is all a pack of lies, but they didn't want their name attached to it for when it ends up being refuted. And in there was, he has properly reimbursed everything for these. He's reported these trips and everything. And then, of course, the Associated Press goes and looks in the Senate records and can find absolutely no sign that Menendez reported these trips. Because, you know, if somebody gives you a free flight in a corporate jet and you're a senator, you're supposed to report that stuff because otherwise it's a gift. And otherwise, you know, it's considered a matter of ethics to disclose if people are giving you really expensive stuff like, you know, trips on private jets and staying at their Dominican Republic, you know, vacation home. Well, it turns out he hadn't. It slipped his mind, and only in late November did he start filing documents for all these things, even though these trips were taking place in, you know, April and stuff like that. So we've already caught Menendez's office. The inanimate objects in the office, the stapler apparently, lied about one angle of this story. So now we have to wonder, well, gee, if they're not honest about filing the proper papers for this, I wonder what else they're not being honest about, including the age of the hookers that Menendez insists he totally, completely was not banging in said, you know, vacation home. It's also worth noting that this guy down in Miami, who's the FBI, you know, raided his office, he is a very big donor to folks like Bill Clinton, Terry McAuliffe, Chris Dodd. I mean, all the folks who have always been rolling in money in the Democratic side of the aisle are buddies with this guy. So this story appears to just be beginning. A lot of big names associated with this. We'll see. This is not to say that every one of those people are banging underage prostitutes in the Dominican Republic, although, you know, your cynical minds are free to draw whichever conclusions they like, I will just say. And that's and we'll have to keep an eye on this story because, man, you know, you thought it was a crazy martini before. It's getting crazier and crazier as this story develops.
Jim, talk to you tomorrow.
All right. See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us on Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.